We want the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitin. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Hello, everyone. It's John Pollock and Waiting here with you on Wednesday evening following AEW Dynamite at the Kia Forum. How are you, Way?
Pretty well, John. How are you?
Good to hear. I'm good. I'm well.
Yeah. Yeah. Not bad. Are you?
You sound skeptical.
No. I buy it today. I see the look on your face.
Okay. Do I wear it on my face?
If you're saying you're good and it's accompanied with like a bit of a smile, then I'm more likely to believe you.
Okay. I'll work on that.
No. You don't have to. You should just be yourself.
You know what I did last night?
What was that?
Sat down, decided I was going to watch a film. You know what I watched?
What's that?
Guess. Go through every movie.
Star Wars.
No.
The Empire Strikes Back.
No Star Wars.
Return of the Jedi.
Way I sat down and I watched in preparation this week on. Oh, am I still here?
Yeah.
In anticipation of post wrestling, the very first X-Men film from 2000 that Rich Fan and WH Park are going to be reviewing this coming Friday on MCU Later as they go on their journey.
Well, excellent. Awesome. Well, that's a great way, excuse to promote the series of podcasts. That's great.
Yes.
What did you think?
I thought it, I think it holds up.
Sorry. I think it might be just.
It's not you or me. I can't tell. I think it holds up pretty well. I've not watched this movie. I remember seeing this movie in the theater. So this is 24 years ago that it came out. And I remember liking it. Again, was not an X-Men fan. So I was watching that film cold and thought, this was a good film. It was like an easy film to digest and get into the characters. And all these years later, you can still buy Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. The man has, you know, he can still pull it off very well. So.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, I remember loving it as like how old would I have been? I don't know, 16 at
15,
the time?
16, yeah.
Yeah, I remember loving it, you know? Like, I mean, for the first time, I think, you know, you're getting, like, this team being presented seriously in live-action form. But these days, after, like, what we've been through with superhero movies, I really don't know how the film will hold up for me.
It's not, it's a bit of a trip if you're going from kind of your Marvel spectacles, these $300 million films that are compared to X-Men. Like it doesn't hit you over the head with like special effects and stuff, but it's like for 2000, I'm sure you were more satisfied.
Sorry. We're going through maybe some audio issues with John here. Try it again. I just turned off your auto adjustment.
Okay. We'll fight through this one.
Yeah. You we have to pay to hear a host's thoughts. Okay, the podcast gods are telling us a message. You got to pay. Join the Post Wrestling Cafe to hear Rich and WH. Except for this week, because it's actually a free show.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They are going to be offering that one for free. So check that out later this week on the Post Wrestling Cafe. Also, Way and I are going to be getting together on Thursday. It is the latest edition of Talk. We do these roughly four times. I might have to reset here because this is going to drive me nuts. Tell everyone, skip talk. Tell everyone where they're going to be on July the 6th, and I'll be back in a minute.
All right, everybody. July the 6th, we will be in Toronto, our lovely city here, for the cash-in. Yes, we announced this on Monday. We were supposed to announce it on Sunday. We didn't get to it, unfortunately. But what difference does it make? We're going to hit you over the head with it from all the way now until July the 6th, 2:30 p.m. at Yuck Yuck's Comedy Club, 224 Richmond Street West, Toronto. It is us, John Pollock waiting, doing a live Q&A. It is our friends at Poison Rana doing what they do best, hosting games, improv. I hear there's a wrestling improv something going on, and I hear it might actually involve one or two post-wrestling personalities. Maybe, maybe not, including improv veteran himself, John Pollock. So we shall see. That'll be quite the tease. Postwrestling.com/live. Tickets are available now. They are $30 Canadian, which basically makes them free if you're coming from an American denomination. So get those tickets right now. Postwrestling.com/live. Hopefully we see you there if you are attending Money in the Bank in Toronto.
Yes. I am back. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Let's cross our fingers.
Okay. I'll answer Nathan's question. The same thing that happens to anything that gets hit by lightning.
Oh, okay. Well, Nathan's question, we should tell the audio-only audience. What happens when a toad gets struck by lightning? Yes.
This was Holly Berry's like big one-liner at the end. And, I mean, it wasn't exactly like a big Arnold Schwarzenegger line at the end. But I guess a memorable one to some.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Enough X-Men for me.
No. I sorry. We kind of got derailed with all the audio issues. So, but I look forward to having some conversation with you, maybe about X-Men, maybe not about X-Men, tomorrow and talk.
Yes. Wei and I are going to be getting together. That show will be out sometime Thursday. So look out for that. And, always fun.
We'll be in person. One of the rare shows that we ever do together in person.
Yeah. Do you remember what I look like?
Well, I mean, I see you every single day. I don't know. Maybe a better question is smell, I guess.
Oh, I smell terrible. So I will. I'll have to shower if I'm coming over.
Okay. All right.
I'll see you. I still remember where you live, so that's good.
Good. It's been a while, I think, since you've been here. Maybe we'll do it out. Like, we'll record the podcast outside on the porch. The weather's beautiful right
now. You are the host. I'll go wherever.
Okay. All right.
You have that great backyard, Wei. Award-winning backyard.
It's quite nice. Yes. Thank you.
So there you have it. Several shows that are coming up this week. Also, to note, we will be back this weekend. We have Rewind to SmackDown on the Cafe, Collision Course coming your Wei, and on Sunday, our UFC 302 review. Myself and Eric Marcotte, we are going to be chatting about the Islam Makhachev-Dustin Poirier fight that is happening in Newark, New Jersey. The center of the MMA universe on Saturday night, Newark, at the
Prodigy. Oh, the center of the universe, period, I think.
Period. Everyone congregates in Newark. The greatest things in life, they come out of Newark. So tune in for that on Saturday, and we'll be back Sunday morning, 11 a.m. Eastern time. But we have a couple of news items to get to. Since we last spoke with you on Monday night, Adam Copeland coming out Tuesday morning with an unfortunate update, but not a surprising one, that he has broken his leg. He has a broken tibia that is going to require surgery from his leap off of the steel cage against Malachi Black on Sunday, and stated, you know, I got cocky. I've been working great, and I've just figured, hey, I think I'm unbreakable. Well, like another film that came out in 2000, he was not unbreakable, and breaking his leg, and will be out several months at least. So hopefully having as quick a recovery as possible, but also a reality that we are watching. You know, Adam Copeland has come in here. He has really, to his credit, like gone above and beyond. I think he's having, this was an excellent run for him where he tailored so much of his style to the opponent and working their match. And the fact is, this is a guy that has had a lot of injuries, and he's on the precipice of 50, and, you know, working with guys half his age.
I think he is 50.
He may already be. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. He might be 50. So that means he's going to be 51, most likely. Mm-hmm. He turns 51 in October. So, you know, he's had this great run, but there is a reality when we're watching these types of matches, and there is sometimes a cost to pay. And sometimes we look at, it's just the silliest things that end up being the injuries, and we watch these spectacular things that they get up from. Well, this was one of those spectacular things that, I mean, it just, it looked frightening in reality. And afterwards there was a price to pay for the spot.
There definitely was. Yeah. You know, recovery times are going to be a lot slower, I think, when you're getting older in age. But he is an incredible athlete and has already had way more intense of a run than I think any of us expected. And I'm not even just talking about AEW, but we're including everything. The high quality that I think he, you know, the high quality standard of work he started building from the moment he came back, even during the pandemic era. So he's like, he's been doing excellent work. And at this point, like, I certainly think with this AEW run, there might have been some sort of... Well, he mentions it himself in this video. There's either ego or something within him that I think wanted to just prove, especially maybe to a much more critical...
He had the Sting mentality. That was what he had, was, I'm not going to be here to just take up a spot and people look at, oh, I've got to work with this guy tonight. He was like, I'm going to justify my spot with all of these killers in the ring that are working this state-of-the-art style. And he didn't want to... He wanted to be at everyone's level, if not above. And it was the same kind of thinking that Sting had. Like, both these guys could have come in and done a fraction of what they did. They could have got by on shortcuts, yeah. And they chose not to.
No. Although I do feel with Sting, especially maybe given like the extra concern they might have had with somebody at his age, I felt like they were taking a lot more precaution with every single one of his stunts. You know, they were certainly dangerous for anybody who's coming back from spinal stenosis and at age 60, sure. But they were also, for the most part, crafted and probably handled with a lot more care than like Adam Copeland standing on top of a cage and just considering diving down. Even if that would have went perfectly as planned and he delivered like a picture perfect elbow, it's still way more risk than I think anybody should be, you know, considering at that age. So,
we saw Sting diving off all those balconies. And I remember that one at Daly's place where he got sent off the ledge. Like, he did stuff that, I mean, man, you were an inch off or something. I mean, and believe me, we would see him do these matches and then have long spurts off. Like, I'm sure this guy had his fair share of issues along the way as he managed that schedule for 4 years.
Yeah. I'm not going to debate, you know, what was supposed to be what's more dangerous. But diving off of like a cage and onto a man wrapped around in barbed wire at his age is something I really couldn't fathom anybody doing. But he's earned my respect, and I think for a lot of the AEW audience at this point, he's more than earned everybody's respect. So hopefully he comes back and is able to continue like what has been a really great run and showcase that creativity, showcase that athleticism, but maybe just scale it back just a little bit in terms of this risk.
Let's go over to NXT. They had a pretty noteworthy show on Tuesday night with several appearances that got a lot of attention. Number one was the reveal of Roxanne Perez's opponent for Battleground, and it was revealed to be TNA Knockouts champion Jordynne Grace, who came out to a huge reaction at the Performance Center, and they kept this very, very quiet. And Grace came out. This was the follow-up from her Royal Rumble appearance this past January, so can't even say like this was totally out of left field. Like, this was a return. The Royal Rumble inclusion got over really well, and they have set this match up for Battleground that I think a lot of people are going to be intrigued by, and they're going to do a kind of match with Jordynne Grace on next Tuesday's show with Stevie Turner as well. But before we get to the other reveal at the end of the show, I think this is great for TNA. I would say
it's great for both of them.
It's for both. Like, it's something refreshing for NXT, I think, to have that. And it's a fresh match. And this crowd, they took to it like this was a major match that you are getting. So I thought it was, and for the TNA side, I just think this is completely
massive,
a positive for TNA to have huge this kind of attention.
Yeah, I really love this move, and I love the promise of more of this interaction. It's to me a real win-win for both companies. You know, obviously for TNA because of, you know, the heightened exposure for one of their own talents, and just their brand itself. You know, like we saw in the Rumble, this is not really the same company would even like in, you know, like they are treating the person coming in from another company with reverence. They're treating her like she's a big deal because she's the TNA Knockouts champion, you know? So I think it's great for TNA, and I think it's great for NXT. You know, like, can you do this with the main roster? Yes, maybe.
You could. There's no restrictions.
You could, but I don't know if, like, Jordynne Grace, like, you know, challenging a, like, coming up and challenging a Becky Lynch or, like, well, I guess at this point, Liv Morgan. Like, I don't know if that would resonate as well with, like, you know, like a WWE main roster crowd. When you're talking about, like, an NXT crowd of, like, diehards who will, like, easily already look at somebody like a Jordynne Grace as, like, a superstar, like a holy shit level type of superstar, I think it's, she feels like a bigger deal here. And I think it's NXT kind of playing more to that hardcore demographic, you know, which is kind of how it was really built on, in being able to facilitate their own little forbidden door, taking some of that, you know, conversation away from being exclusive to just the New Japan AEW, for instance. So it's making NXT feel like that much more of an interesting, unpredictable show. And obviously, it's been great for TNA as well.
What if they had done this segment instead of Stevie Turner, that Ariana Grace comes out and says, "I'm the only Grace around here, and I want that TNA Knockouts title."
Okay.
And then Santino Marella comes to sanction a TNA Knockouts title match on either program,
depending how deep they want to get into that interaction. I could see Ariana Grace making an appearance on Impact. I think that would be awesome. It'd be a great little.
I wouldn't acknowledge the father daughter.
I would not.
I would actually just do it as like the if you know you know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah, there's a lot of great potential.
NXT and TNA, they could do some fun stuff with this, and I think it's like a good. You know, it every now and then to do something like this, I think it really, like you just saw from the audience reaction. Then at the end of the night, so for several weeks now, we have had the mystery attacker that have been taking out Noam Dar. Then we had Oro Mensah attacked, and Trick Williams has been accused of being the mystery attacker. Lash Legend coming to his defense, stating Trick would not do that. And so at the end of the night, we got the reveal. It was like this week between AEW and WWE, we had all these mystery attackers that we had to clean up all these angles with the assailants. And it was Ethan Page revealed at the end of the night, taking out Trick Williams and then hoisting up the NXT championship. So we know that Ethan Page, his deal had expired at AEW. He's in to WWE, and I think we even talked about this when his deal came up, that this could be a potential avenue for him. I feel Ethan Page is going to get a much better shake here at NXT. Namely, I think he's going to get to cut promos in NXT, which was something he didn't get to do a whole lot of in AEW.
Yeah, and I think we've seen, like, with anybody showing up from AEW so far, like, they've had more kind of focus as characters and more maybe consistent airtime, you could say. Even somebody like Alexis King, who I think you can maybe debate, you know, in terms of how successful they've been. I think we can almost all agree that he's got a more focused character and a more focused presence on as a part of, like, the NXT roster than he did in AEW. To be honest, like, I this one surprised me a little bit, you know, just given maybe who they've been bringing back lately. Now, Sean Spears is maybe an exception because he seems to be coming in more as, like, a talent slash coach and maybe has sort of, like, longer term aspirations on the coaching side of things. I mean, that could be the case for Ethan Page as well, but he's not somebody who's already been through their system. He's somebody who's coming in seemingly now, at least as a talent. But then I'm also reminded of an LA Knight, somebody who came in like in his 30s, and look at the jackpot that they found in bringing somebody like him in, you know, and what does he have in common with an Ethan Page? He can talk, you know, and there's always going to be room, especially in a place like NXT, for guys who could talk like Ethan Page. So I'm very excited to see what he does.
Yeah. I mean, he's coming in for he's in a main event position right off the bat. So I thought it was a really entertaining episode just for some, you know, that unpredictability factor that you have for NXT of doing some surprise appearances.
I'm sure you were loving the Sexy Red interactions throughout the
show.
Sexy
Red was all over this thing. Yeah. I mean, and she's going to be at Battleground on top of that.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed all that. Honestly, like, this was a show that, like, felt unpredictable given its new debuts. It seems to be a show that is playing to, again, that more that hardcore demographic that is into wrestling, not just it within the WWE, and doing a very successful job of it on this show. It's also seemingly playing to a much younger, hipper audience by bringing in a buzzed about musical act like Sexy Red and having her be such a big presence on this show.
Yeah, balancing out the young and hip aspect was Charlie Dempsey going up to Damon Kemp. Capiche? What am I watching?
Well, that was him pretending to be
Tony D'Angelo.
Yeah.
I got it. It was just a very, very awkward segment, I thought, overall. But for Battleground, which is next weekend at the world-famous UFC Apex, the updated card, we have Roxanne Perez against Jordan Grace for the women's title, Shayna Baszler and Lola Vice in an NXT Underground match, which I'm curious to see how they do that at the Apex, if they can have give it more of a UFC feel when you're there. Like, they should do it in an octagon if you can, but you can't fit that in a ring in there, too, so...
Yeah, in the past, Underground has just been no ropes, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that? Yeah. So, I can't see them doing that. I mean, can they change the set that much for one match? I mean, let's see.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how they decorate this. Like, it's going to be about, like, 600-700 people that they can put in here. Obafemi, Wesley, and Joe Coffey for the NXT North American title. Nathan Frazier and Axiom against Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson. I am dying to watch Luke Gallows and Nathan Frazier together. That, to me, is the...
Really?
That's... the pairing that I'm looking most forward to. And then the ladder match to determine the first NXT Women's North American Champion, Sol Ruka, Lash Legend, Fallon Henley, Jada Parker, Meechan, and Kalani Jordan. I don't know what to expect from this match. You have varying degrees of performers in this match. You throw in a ladder into the mix. It feels like one of those feast or famine type of matches. They will. I imagine this one is going to be the most... prepared in advance with these six, but
it's a chance for them to gain some buzz and potentially maybe steal the show. We'll see.
And I guess we'll see if like Trick is not you would think his match is going to be announced next week at some point to add on to the Battleground show. So anyway, that's coming up on June the 9th. Yeah, I mean it would seem like you're just going to quickly go to that match right away. Best of the Super Juniors continues, and we have got now one match apiece left in the A block and B blocks over the next 2 days at Corcoran Hall. So Thursday morning, 5:30 a.m. Eastern, we're all waking up to watch the final five A block matches, which have Blake Christian and Kosei Fujita, Kevin Knight against Bushi, Clark Connors against Yoshinobu Kanemaru, and El Desperado against Hayata, as well as TJP against Teton. So... the top two advance to the semifinals next Monday. And in the case of any like tiebreakers here, you have Teton, El Desperado, Blake Christian. They all have 10 points, as does Hayata. But TJP has 8 points. If he wins, he would advance by beating Teton. So there's the A block has a lot more different calculations that you can come up with. My thought is that I see El Desperado and TJP being the ones to go to the semifinal. We will see. I could be wrong. And then the B block matches go down on Friday. And the key match is Hiromu Takahashi against Taiji Ishimori. The winner of that will advance. And then it comes down to which one of them wins. And Doki is the one that is alive. Robbie Eagles is technically out. So it's pretty much down to three. And it's down to basically Hiromu, Taiji Ishimori, and Doki. And again, I'm thinking Hiromu and Desperado would be my thought of what the final is, but sometimes I'm wrong on these things. So we will see how the last couple of days pan out and we get to the final four that's happening on Monday. Ratings notes. We'll just go through the WWE ones. We talked a bit about the other ratings on Pollock and Thurston today, but SmackDown on Friday, Saudi Arabia did 2,147,000 viewers and a 0.56 in the demo for the taped show from Saudi Arabia. Small decrease from the prior week. Didn't have a big impact airing several hours on tape delay. This was against the Dallas Mavericks, Minnesota Timberwolves game, and the Florida Panthers, New York Rangers. Who do you have in the Stanley Cup? Are you
the what? The Panthers and the Rangers?
The Panthers and the Rangers are in the Eastern Conference, and then we have Edmonton and Dallas on the other side.
So probably not.
They're playing as we speak here. Dallas is they're up 2-1 in the series.
Okay. Whichever name comes first in the alphabet is my pick.
Okay, so you are, I guess, going. Oh, that's a close one because E for Edmonton comes right before F for Florida. So I guess. No, Dallas, the Stars.
That's exactly.
Man, we have D E F. all represented in this Final Four. Did you do that on purpose? Damn.
Of course, yes.
Man, Rangers didn't have a prayer. Buried in the alphabet. Monday's Raw did 1,690,000 viewers and a 0.55. This was going against Game 4 of the Celtics and Pacers, with the Pacers eliminating the Celtics. So this was actually a pretty good number for Raw. They were only down 2% this week. This is with NBA competition, because last week they had no NBA competition. So only being down 2%, greatly, I think that was a positive for the show. And just think of what that surge would have been if the final 60 seconds of Raw had aired. I think this would have gone through the roof.
Yeah, I wonder how they're going to handle this, either on SmackDown or maybe next week on Raw. Maybe they just start off with this.
I'm sure they'll replay it. They put the whole segment up on YouTube almost immediately. So, yeah. I mean, it was a gaffe, but I'm sure.
Maybe Liv can say, I thought we were off air. I didn't intend on anybody seeing this.
Does that mean it doesn't really happen?
I don't know.
Maybe it'll mean that only international viewers are aware of this angle. They're only going to play this for the international markets. US, it never happened.
Does that mean mommy knows?
I don't know where she was when this was playing. She was in the US, then Dominic might be in the clear. All right. And the last thing before we finish off, this weekend is UFC 302. We're going to do a more extensive look at this with Jack Winon on Friday for the audio news updates, which are available at postwrestlingcafe.com. The big fight, it's Islam Makhachev against Dustin Poirier. This is Dustin Poirier's 30th fight in the UFC, and this is, I know he's talking about the idea that this could be his last fight. More than likely, this would be his last shot at a championship. And if he were to win this, it would be a pretty significant moment. He's a heavy underdog in this fight, and for good reason. But I have seen the odds for this. Makhachev is something like a minus 625 favorite. And I don't know. I don't know how comfortable I would be at that, like that wide of a gap. But certainly, like Dustin Poirier, he has had his shots against Khabib Nurmagomedov, against Charles Oliveira, and he has not been successful. So there's an interesting story here with Dustin Poirier. And if he were to be able to pull this off, it would be a notable upset, but it would also be a crazy moment for him to finally win a UFC championship. Because if not, he'll probably go down as the most successful UFC fighter not to win a UFC championship. And then the other major fight is Sean Strickland and Paulo Costa in a 5-round middleweight contest. Strickland just lost the middleweight title in January in Toronto to Dricus du Plessis. So he's coming.
Were you at that one?
Yes.
Oh, you were.
I was. I caught that card. Yes. Yeah. Okay. You may remember. So Strickland is coming back several months later, and he's taking on Paulo Costa here in a 5-round fight, which should probably favor Sean Strickland. Paulo Costa going 5 rounds, I think that's going to be a challenge for him. He has not been the most active fighter in the UFC and has not competed since, he had the fight with Robert Whittaker back in February. Prior to that, had not fought since 2022. And, for some, Sean Strickland is a very he is a draw for some. He's a turnoff to others. Wei Ting has, in fact, like gone on strike. He will not participate in any discussion that I have regarding Sean Strickland. So I'm just going to move on. Wei has made his protest known about his thoughts on Sean Strickland that he will not participate in. Understood. he's kept much quieter this fight week. I mean, that Toronto one, it was that fight week was insanity, and this guy has kept a much quieter profile, I will say, going into this fight with Costa. But the rest of the card, there's some very good fights on the undercard. We'll go into more of those on Friday. So UFC 302 is Saturday night in Newark, New Jersey. Come for
the
fights.
The universe.
Stay for whatever else.
All forms of life will be there. Humans, aliens, we don't even know.
Well, I promised it on Monday, and I am not going to forget this time. We said on Monday we would have an announcement tonight, so I'm going to, the floor is ours to reveal that in the month of June, Wei and I had this decision. Are we doing enough shows together? And Wei said, We are not, John. We are dropping the ball. So for the month of June, we are going to be staying up late on Wednesday nights. We are going to bring you Rewind to Dynamite. And then after the review, we are jumping over to the Post Wrestling Cafe for each Wednesday in the month of June to review that week's episode of Who Killed WCW. And after four episodes, this is going to be like the extended game of Clue. We're going to figure out who killed WCW, with what weapon, in what room. This is the new series that Vice is putting out. It will be airing Tuesday nights on Vice. And to kick off our coverage of Who Killed WCW, I'll be joined by Evan Husney next week. That'll be a free interview for everyone. And then our first review Wednesday night next week. And in order to kind of condense things, a lot of the news on Wednesdays I'm going to mainly focus on with Brandon Thurston during the day. And for the evening, we're going to probably dive into the Dynamite review a lot quicker because these are late nights and Way and I have very early mornings as well. So bear with us, but this will be for those that want to jump onto the Post Wrestling Cafe. That will be every Wednesday night with the double shot coming back.
I'm looking forward to it. I need to know exactly who did this. Who did this? I've been waiting to know.
Well, from my understanding, Bret Hart is not going to disappoint in at least in the first episode.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. So
I can't wait.
Bret Hart very much part of this series, as are Brad Siegel and Stu Snyder, who are two very key figures that were executives on opposite sides in the WWF and WCW, and I'm sure we'll be talking about them a lot more. People probably know their names, but they're both interviewed for this series. I'm really interested in that aspect. So, again, Wednesday nights, we'll have the double shot, and next Tuesday, Evan Husney, that interview will be up for everybody. So, where can you watch Who Killed WCW? Well, Vice, everyone knows, is in the U.S., and I think there's going to be a lot of people worldwide that want to get down to the whodunit. Who Killed WCW? And there's only one way to access Who Killed WCW, and we've got the key.
Whether or not you host a wrestling podcast, it can be difficult keeping up with every show as a wrestling fan. A must-have in our viewing process here at Post is access to AEW Plus, a service only available in the U.S. and Canada through a trusted VPN like NordVPN. All editions of Dynamite and Rampage and Collision Live without dealing with the TV network's buggy app and extra fees, watch matches commercial-free, pause and rewind live, and access shows on demand as soon as the event ends. But my favorite use of a VPN like Nord's is the ability to unlock cheaper prices for pay-per-views in other countries. In the US, purchasing Double or Nothing will cost you about $50, but switching your location to the UK using NordVPN allows you to purchase the event for half the price at $25, $20 if you're an AEW Plus subscriber. A NordVPN subscription costs less than $3 a month when you sign up at nordvpn.com/postwrestling, where you get 4 bonus months on top of all 2-year plans. So you're essentially spending $3 to save at least $25. Again, sign up at nordvpn.com/postwrestling. They even have a 30-day money-back guarantee if you're not satisfied. Visit our link, get your bonus months, and tell Nord you found them through us.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw, featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com. Thanks, Nord.
Did you remember?
I did remember this one, actually. I appreciate the prompting there. Wei is very nervous around these parts of the show. I did remember this week.
Well, it is the end of the month, so we'll see if you have to worry about this next month.
Now Wei can take a giant exhale for the rest of this show. As we go into Dynamite from the Kia Forum in Inglewood, California, WrestleTix reporting just under 5,000 tickets distributed for the show, and man, for this show, coming off the pay-per-view, number one, I'm sure the Adam Copeland injury threw a bit of a curveball into things. They had the Gauntlet Battle Royal, so you were somewhat handicapped by the match type that a lot of the key names were in this Battle Royal that you couldn't announce in advance. They did not have MJF on the show, and yeah, it was a show that, I mean, match-wise, you really couldn't promote anything in the Gauntlet, so the matches, they didn't really jump out. They had this Mercedes match that they didn't set up until during the show, and a lot of non-wrestling segments on this show prior to that gauntlet.
Right, yeah. By the time the show started, though, they did have a lot announced. I mean, it was more of a question of, I guess, they tend to do this, though, you know, especially like coming off of a pay-per-view, like leave it until the day of.
This audience, man, were they deflated when they saw that graphic of MJF returns next week. They were audible, like they were obviously looking. And you can't say AEW, they never teased MJF for tonight, but you can understand how people make that assumption. You see him on Sunday, he's got to be on the follow-up show. But I think it would have been crazy to just have him come up in that gauntlet unannounced or on the show unannounced. Like if he was on, they should have made that very clear Sunday night.
I guess so. Though I do think like there is an expectation for like, you know, somebody who just returned on the pay-per-view to have a presence on the actual TV. Like he was arguably maybe the biggest news coming out of the pay-per-view. So
I would say he was the biggest news.
Yeah. So other than that, you know, Luke Perry's son getting a lit on fire, of course. But you know, there is an understandable disappointment that he wasn't on the show. They did announce him for next week. Yes.
So Mercedes comes out for her championship celebration, total babyface reaction and a babyface speech from Mercedes. Mm-hmm. She said that her and Willow tore down the house and Willow had the run of her career. She's just too damn nice. She saw Chris Statlander and Stokely were going to screw her, but hopes Willow comes back better than ever and kicks their asses. So that was, you know, it was a pretty simple speech, and you got Sky Blue appearing on the screen as they replay the attack all the way from last month on Mercedes Moné. And Sky Blue says, "Some of my best work." And just like that, the mystery has been solved. Just like that, my best work. And she says she's just getting started. So Blue jumps her from behind as Mercedes is still watching the screen and hits a TKO, grabs the TBS title. And later in the show, they would announce this title match for about an hour after this angle was shot.
Yeah. I think that's also, first of all, like, let's just talk about the segment. I thought Moné sounded good here. I don't know if it's just simply having a belt on her or the fact that she's now had a match behind her, or just the fact she's been here for now several months, but I thought she sounded good and confident and better than her other speaking appearances. And I got the sense coming off of the angle on Sunday that they were going to keep her as a baby face because she didn't get involved in the turn with Statlander and won legitimately against Willow. So I do think she'll fare much better as a baby face against opponents like Sky Blue than against Willow. And clearly they have a path for her as a baby face that they wanted to stick to.
The Elite arrived along with Jack Perry in his scapegoat bus that I guess he's traveling the country with now. Swerve Strickland and Killswitch was our House of the Dragon promotional match of the night, non-title, and crowd was solidly behind Swerve in this opener. Swerve is getting beaten down as they go through picture-in-picture and tries for a triangle, up kicks Killswitch, and the crowd rallies behind him. Killswitch lands a headbutt and chokeslam for a two count, goes to get the chair, but Nana yanks it away, so Killswitch punches the chair out of Nana's hands as Swerve executes kicks from the apron, and a Swerve stomp really picks up with crowd heat here. Swerve faints, kicks him, and then is hit with another choke slam and a standing moonsault by Killswitch for a two count. Swerve ducks the extinction lariat, lands a released German house call and Swerve stomp. Every single person thought this was the ending, and I thought this near fall was awesome because I think it was, I just think everyone bit on this near fall. And so Swerve just gets up, hits one more house call, and wins in 11 minutes and 45 seconds. I thought it's a strong ending, and the audience was really behind Swerve here for a match that, for all intents and purposes, was sort of just a exhibition of sorts that, I mean, was not a outcome was not in much doubt. But the aftermath saw Swerve cut off part of Killswitch's hair as retaliation for the patriarchy doing the same to him a few weeks back.
Yeah. I thought it over-delivered for what was essentially like a TV showcase match for Swerve by having him handle a giant, but obviously, you know, having Luchasaurus wrestle in the dragon match, along with the guy who whose catchphrase is "Whose house?" I'm sure some of that figured into it. It all, I'm sure, made them a good amount of money, hopefully. So they delivered, though, in delivering like a match that over exceeded expectations by giving like a big kick out at the end for a kill switch, and certainly boosted the excitement for this one. I love Swerve cutting off the hair. Calls back to like sort of that sadistic, edgier side of Swerve that was so I guess lovable during his heel run. And I wondered if this was suggesting the feud continuing, but I think we could tell from it later on in the show. It just seems to be them closing things off.
Yeah, this was, I think, Swerve getting in his exclamation point on the end of this with the hair. Jon Moxley did a promo in the back. He's taking on Rocky Romero in an eliminator bout and says that he is one of the most dangerous men in the world. He knows it's not smart for him to do this with his arm, but I'm never 100%. This is what champions do. They show up. He's not pissing away at Disney World today. He's at the Kia Forum tonight, Osaka Joe Hall for Dominion, then Sumo Hall for Bloodsport, and then Long Island for Forbidden Door. So, yeah, this guy is going to Japan twice over the next month.
Yeah, how far apart are those shows?
Osaka Joe Hall Dominion is June 9th, and then it's 2 weeks later is Bloodsport.
Oh yeah, so he's definitely not sticking around. Yeah, that's a lot of air miles. But I mean, when you're the IWGP champion, he's already facing criticisms for not being there enough. So I mean, I'm sure there's a part of him that I'm sure loves all of this. I am also curious though to know how a Jon Moxley would react to Disney World. I'd be just as curious to see him at Disney World than I would
the BCC goes to Disney Sport. World.
Yeah. Well, I'm Danielson. I could see loving it. You know, he posted photos at Legoland not too long ago. I'm sure if he hasn't already, Jon Moxley at some point will be taking his daughter to Disney World. And what's that going to be like? I need to know.
Well, these are all vignettes.
The real
for the
Forbidden
future.
Door.
You know, if he really wanted to get our sympathies for him, he could say, I've got to go to Osaka Joe Hall to face evil. All right? That's what champions do, okay? They show up when they don't want to. The debut of TV Time with Chris Jericho was next. In the history of pro wrestling interview segments, this by design, so I think this was an achievement for what they were going for, had to be the gaudiest, lamest set design I have ever seen for a wrestling segment. This was something that, I mean, this brought me back to like second year RTA set design.
We never had anything this good.
Yeah.
Trust me. Well, like we just had like flat backgrounds. Like they went through the effort of cutting these shapes into
a tree. We got the tree, the grass, a podium, and sticking with tradition, the I guess updated Geritron 5000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Big Bill introduces Jericho, and Jericho asks, who wants more TV time? And Taz says, it's a shoot. It's a shoot for this guy. You know I do. And Bill has a metaphor about trees, leaves coming down in the fall, but they come back stronger in the spring. Jericho plugs his new shirt and thanks all of his fans that he is now calling all of my branches for sitting under my tree.
He called it the highest selling shirt at AEW Shop, which I think is a pretty blatant lie, according to the website's rankings.
Yeah, and he also had this shirt, and he's like, "Who wants it? Who wants it?" And then he casually just puts it down on the turnbuckle and never gives it away. he said, "Like, I will say this, okay? This is a very ballsy segment to do. It's a ballsy character to do, where it's like it's pretty much coming up with stuff that is designed to fall flat on its face, but you have some kind of either desire to see this man get his comeuppance from someone or just cringe at the entire segment. Like that is the intended goal of this segment.
Yeah. I mean, when somebody's clearly in on the joke and they're doing it intentionally, it starts to become amusing. You're laughing kind of with them, not really at them.
Well, this audience wasn't reacting to much of this. He said, if adversity is ice cream, always put a cherry on top. And he brings out a man who walked right under the shade of the learning tree on Sunday. And it's Brian Keith, who screams at these fans for not respecting Jericho. And they start chanting, shut the fuck up. And Brian's like, see what I mean? And he says that he's a bad apple. And Jericho notes, and everyone knows that
Big Bill said that.
Oh, Big Bill said the big. Yeah. Let's assign the proper credit to for the line. And Jericho says that a bad apple doesn't fall far from the trap. Sorry, this is just brutal to recap. Hook comes out and he attacks security when Samoa Joe, in his permanent dress now, this floral design shirt that was a hit the 1 week with Shibata. That's the shirt he wears now. This is like the third time we've seen him wear it since. And he just walks up to Hook, whispers something, and leaves with Hook.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the segment. I mean, primarily I was interested to see what Brian Keith's involvement would be like. This is, to my knowledge, his first speaking role on Dynamite. He sounded awesome, very charismatic, and I think will hopefully fit in well with the Jericho Vortex. Now, like, it's become a running joke even within, you know, the stable. Welcome to the Jericho Vortex, you know, like, good... Like it's almost
didn't
like
say the, like what sucked you into the Jericho Vortex or something that. Yeah.
But it's almost Jericho kind of like owning the criticism of people going like, you know, getting into his orbit and not necessarily leaving advanced because, for whatever reason, you know, but can Brian Keith and for that matter, Big Bill actually advance their careers by being a part of this. Like that is going to be one of the major criticisms, I think, coming off of this whole thing. But for tonight, I thought he was very entertaining. And I look forward to seeing more involving these three.
Then we had the most awkward throw from Excalibur, who throws to highlights of Jon Moxley and Konosuke Takeshita, then corrects himself and says, we're now going to see Stephanie Vaquer. And then they go to Moxley and Takeshita highlights. So they air that with no voiceover and come back. And then they throw to the feature on Stephanie Vaquer, who will be making her AEW debut. They don't say when. The answer would be in about 20 minutes. Kind of needed this video package, I think, to give context for the angle later. Because had they not aired this, you would have just had the barrage of people of who was this person? How am I supposed to know? Where's the video package? Well, you got the video package.
Yeah, well, I definitely think like there are people who might go too far for that sort of argument. But having the video package just helps so much in making it feel like a seamless transition and like a I don't know, effective presentation of somebody who was going to show up on your TV within I guess minutes. So I think you have to really applaud them for actually going putting in the effort of creating a video package to introduce her.
Jon Moxley against Rocky Romero. This is Moxley working with one arm, and Moxley is just getting attacked from the get-go with Romero attacking the arm. When they went to break, they had this exchange where Tony Schiavone receives a note from Tony Khan, and Taz asks, how many times do you hear from Tony Khan during the show? And Schiavone just responds, watch the match, dude. And Taz just flipped out. Dude, I'm calling the freaking match, okay? Don't tell me to call the match. I'm calling it. Kiss my ass. It was amazing to listen to these guys. I'm pretty sure this was during the break. Well worth NordVPN/post-wrestling.
Oh, you got to get AEW Plus. Watch something like that.
Get here. Taz scream for Schiavone to kiss.
They're
his
hilarious
ass
during the commercial break.
It's wild how different they go. Like it's like they snap their fingers. It's totally different. They don't even have to tell me when they're in picture in picture. It's so obvious when they're in picture in picture.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Moxley is biting him on the turnbuckle. Romero kicks at the arm, then gets caught with a cutter out of nowhere. Moxley defends the armbar, postures to it, and gets the knees to the head. Bulldog choke is applied with one arm, but then Romero counters and snaps the arm, flying armbar off the turnbuckle. But then he postures up, stomps his way free. Lariat, Death Rider, and the one-armed Jon Moxley pins Rocky Romero in 10 minutes and 37 seconds in the Eliminator match.
Very good match, I thought. You know, unlike maybe my expectations for the Takeshita match, which I was kind of expecting more of like a, you know, back and forth, hard-hitting type of match, I was admittedly a lot more appreciative of Moxley's one arm selling in this one. I thought he was great at fighting with the handicap and showing struggle with everything he does, including like not being able to properly apply the bulldog choke partway through and having to let go and things like that. I mean, I thought Rocky as well was excellent. You know, I love seeing him start the match hot as a strategy. This sort of handicap for Moxley makes a cruiserweight like Rocky feel like a credible challenger in a setting like this. So I'm enjoying this run. I'm curious to see if he carries the arm injury through to Dominion or even Bloodsport as well. You know, like how much will they respect AEW angles on a fully New Japan show?
Did you hear the story about Matt Camp, who was previously with the bump and then left WWE earlier this year? And he started his own show now that you can check out. And he was speaking about the Rey Mysterio eyeball injury where he lost the eye.
What did he say?
So this story is amazing. So he loses the eye in about July. So around Halloween time, it's October, and it's a Halloween themed edition of The Bump. And they interview Rey Mysterio. And he does this great interview, and it's right around Halloween Havoc. And they start talking to him about almost losing his mask at Halloween Havoc, but he ended up keeping the mask. And he goes off into his memorabilia or whatever, and he brings these like vintage masks, and he's showing them on camera, these masks, and he's really getting into it and everything. And then after the interview, they're told, we can't air the video. They're like, why not? Rey wasn't wearing the right mask that hid his eye. Because you remember afterwards, he wore the mask where the eye was covered. And this is right at the tail end of them still acknowledging this. So, and he even has the graphic on his show. They air the interview with a graphic that reads, on the phone with Rey Mysterio to get around it. But he can't show any of the stuff he's showing. I guess they had to cut stuff out.
Okay.
And then like a few weeks later, they just ditched they no longer worried about the eye anymore. And suddenly his eye just grew back. But he was just like that. That was just one of many examples.
I don't know if his eye grew back. I think.
Well, how else did it come back? It
got popped back in, and then they probably got some stem cells in it and fixed it right up. Yeah,
he's got that. That's Wolverine.
That's a good a bit of attention to detail by whoever caught that, because I don't know if I would have noticed.
Well, no one would have noticed. That was the point. So, nor have any
on the internet. Are you kidding me, John? You know wrestling fans.
Do you remember when he started wearing the normal mask again?
Brian in the chat room would have noticed. Okay,
don't want to be that guy. Well. Anyway, it was a rather amusing story I found. How did we get to that? Was it because the one arm Moxley? It was because Rocky Romero has the eye patch. That's what triggered it for me. Right. To answer your question, I kind of want to see Moxley carry this arm injury. It's kind of interesting. Yeah, it's a different way for him to work. I'm sure he's kind of creatively stimulated by working with a handicap. Can't do a kip up with it. So I mean, that's,
who's he facing on Bloodsport? Do we know?
They haven't announced his match yet for that.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Renee is with Joe and Hook, and Joe explains that he has just taught Hook his first lesson, that they don't exist on their time. Truly dangerous men exist on our time. And they walk away. And if this is not a tag team, then I want this to be like a digital series of these two cops.
Do we know that Hook isn't really Joe's son? I mean, come on. This is that much more likely, I think, of a father-son duo. You know, look at this. I love it. I love it already. I mean, they were great rivals in that match. And I just think as a team, there's a lot of great potential. Like, they really do feel like a father and son. They have certainly like similar demeanors, but you have Joe who can definitely speak really, really well. And Hook needs somebody who could do that for him. So I'm looking forward to this. And I'm looking forward to seeing some suplexes from these
Hooker
two.
By Crook.
That's the name?
That's what Big Bill would come up with.
I think it would be a tree pun.
That's going to be my save now. Well, let's leave this conversation. Don Callis comes out with a contract, lots of heat for him, and he calls out Orange Cassidy. Cassidy comes out to Jane, which Callis is singing along with as he presents him with the contract, and Cassidy, the longest I've ever seen a man take to tear up a piece of paper was... Orange Cassidy here. I think this was about a solid like 16 seconds to rip this piece of paper in half. And Callis explains, no one says no to me. Stokely Hathaway and Chris Statlander come out and doesn't like how OC walks or talks and says, you're just like Willow. And Statlander accepts the contract on behalf of her best friend. And we see Trent appear in the ring, which was a clever way to tie all of this together. And Trent attacks Cassidy, busting him open and extends his arms as not only do him and Callis hug, but they do the zoom out as well for this. So we did get a new family member. And I guess we didn't really get a signal that Statlander and Hathaway are part of the family, but no. There seemed to be at least they use them just as kind of now. the connective tissue. Yes.
Yeah. They're just heels now. And I guess she also hates Orange Cassidy cause she's a bad guy now. I do have questions about this. Okay. The contract was never for Trent. We don't know that Callis even wanted Trent by the end here, because of the hug, I guess we do know, but like Trent was assuming a lot here. Okay. He was assuming that, I guess, Orange Cassidy wasn't going to accept, which is like an easy assumption to make, cause I don't think anybody bought into this segment beforehand. But he was just going to come in here and just basically offer himself to Don Callis.
Well, maybe Trent was like all of us that knew Cassidy wasn't going to accept this contract. So he saw an opening.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. I'm not that interested in this, dude. Like I wasn't that interested, honestly, to begin with, maybe for the first match, but we've been through two matches with Orange and Trent already. Trent's lost both of them. I think if they needed to do this, Trent should have had Callis's help to beat Orange on Sunday. That way they'd be 1-1. He'd have that much more, I think, of an easy transition to like being a part of the Callis family, because the Callis family would have helped him finally beat Orange. And then they'd be able to at least, like, you know, in this series, like, be, you know, set up a rubber match. But now you're promising another Trent Orange match that I don't have that much interest in. And I think it's just a feud that has kind of overextended, at least it stayed to me.
Well, this is it's a big role for Trent, and we will see if it gets him to another level, and if there's, I mean, you're attaching him to your big heel figure here.
Has it really done that well for like the other members of the group? I mean, it's given them some something, you know, like it's given Kyle Fletcher something. It's given, well, Hobbs had something. Who else is in the group? Sammy?
Takeshita?
Okay, yeah, it's definitely helped Takeshita.
Takeshita would be probably in no man's land if he wasn't part of the group.
Very true. Yeah, I mean, it is like for Trent, so let's see what he does.
Then we had Renee with Daniel Garcia and Daddy Magic, and Garcia says he gets stuck in his head. He's not getting ahead, so he has his eyes on the international title. He's going to climb the rankings and make Ospreay's luggage lighter on these long international flights. So he is going to move up the rankings. He should have learned from Kyle O'Reilly, who this man has just walked into so many title matches since his return, and he's going to get his latest on Collision against Ospreay after he just lost to Adam Copeland 2 weeks ago. Good for him. He's getting another title match. This guy just has to look at a belt and he gets the title match. So Daniel Garcia needs to be following this guy.
I haven't followed the rankings lately. I don't exactly know where Kyle O'Reilly ranks compared to Daniel Garcia, but you know, Kyle's doing something right. I have no explanation in that sense. I mean, they are spending a bit longer to kind of tell Daniel Garcia's story on his route to facing Will Ospreay for that championship. But you kind of know what the end result is. It's going to be Garcia building himself to a TV match. He's going to have a great match, and then he's going to fall back down the ladder to obscurity. I mean, it's happened now, I think, for like 2 years. So he gets over in every appearance with his dance, but he really hasn't found a stable, elevated role within this roster. And I don't think he's going to be Will Ospreay really anytime soon. I just hope that he gets some sort of sustained, you know, program that's highly featured, that can actually like have him feel like he's somebody who's like elevated on this roster. But I guess in the meantime, we can rely on him for great matches.
Well, you outlined, I think, a bigger issue that some have is that you see who the stars are that are going to be the key people. And then you see kind of that middle rung, that great wrestlers, but you don't have that faith are going to make it to that next level. And there's a lot of that middle class. It's an excellent middle class of talent, but you do sort of see those tiers, and it does make it hard, I think, to elevate, just pick a name out of a hat, a Daniel Garcia, when you sort of see them in this position and you realize, okay, they might get the 3-week push and then they're going to be forgotten about or just put right back to where they were 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. And maybe it's unfair, you know, to expect everybody to get that sort of elevated push at this point, because AEW has to, like, they don't have a choice this year but to rely on their surefire top stars, guys who are going to definitely make a difference, you know, either in their ratings or their buy rates or whatever. Maybe they don't really kind of have the space, at least on Dynamite, to vote to your up and coming talent right now when you have a Mercedes Moné and an Okada and an Ospreay that you're trying to build.
And you can't get everybody over. You can look at, like, my idea would be that, okay, you're not going to get 15 new people over to be main eventers. That's unrealistic, and you just don't have the spots for that. But I would state, who are our four guys that a year from now we want to see in major spots? And maybe all four of them aren't going to make it, but if two of them make it, great. If three of them make it, even better. But you make, like, four people that are going to be booked in such a way that they are booked above your middle class. And a year from now, your audience is going to see these people as, and that comes down to, like, see who are those people.
Yeah. And I guess, is Daniel Garcia of that class? You know, do we sense that they might be building anything long-term for him so that next year, hopefully he might be able to ascend to that rank? I don't really see it at this point for him, at least.
Mercedes Moné and Sky Blue for the TBS Championship. A chance back and forth for both women in this. There was a powerbomb into a Rana counter by Moné, and then did a full Nelson into a twisting slam, Blue did. And then we see a knee strike delivered by Moné, responded with a super kick from Sky Blue, and she comes off, Moné comes off the ropes for, or sorry, it's Blue that comes off the ropes and goes for the code Blue, but it's countered into a moneymaker in 7 minutes and 37 seconds. So Mercedes retains the championship, and you could see what they were going for here with the finish and the code Blue into the moneymaker.
Yeah, I don't know if there's, like, you know, maybe a bit of sort of like a wink at, like, Mercedes' history with Amazing Red, the fact that she was able to counter that move, but I thought it was a very good match. The pace was very consistent. Everything looked good. I think Mercedes, if anybody would have read any ring rust into, like, the performance on Sunday, I definitely didn't think there was any tonight. She shook it off, and she looked as confident as I think ever. Got a great babyface reaction throughout the match. So any concerns that she's getting too many heel reactions, that's not the case. Like, we didn't have to be concerned, you know. Like, she put in a well-received performance on Sunday, came out here, faced off against a heel in Sky Blue, and got a great babyface reaction. So I think, you know, the babyface push is still on. Sky Blue looked very good as well. You know, to me, this was, like, a great sign that, like, the AEW standard, at least, you know, between, like, people like Sky Blue and, like, just the talents that are frequently featured on TV, is very high. She looked every bit, I think, you know, the dance partner for somebody that is very well regarded, like a Mercedes Moné. So it's I think a testament to, like, you know, how far the AEW division has come that might be underrecognized.
After the match, Stephanie Vaquer comes out, holds up the Strong Women's Championship, and Moné holds up her TBS Championship, and seems to be the Forbidden Door direction. So I like the way they did this with the video package. She came out, she got a decent reaction. It's, you know, it's a match that you have to build up, but they at least tried to give some context on who Stephanie Vaquer was if you had not seen her before.
Yeah, they had that match together first, right, in the tournament before she got injured.
That's right. That's right. Yes.
So technically a rematch, and I mean, I'm sure they'll play up that story, but I think, like, Forbidden Door is a perfect time to introduce somebody like Stephanie Vaquer into this sort of universe. Like, at some point we knew she was probably going to jump in, but this is, like, a high profile feature role for her where she's able to feel like an attraction. You know, a match against Mercedes Moné at Forbidden Door is a huge way to introduce her, and I think the match will certainly deliver it if the first is in any indication.
Renee is outside of the trainer's room looking for an update on Orange Cassidy, but the segment is hijacked by Stokely Hathaway and Chris Statlander, and Statlander cuts a promo. Well, first Stokely states that the catalyst for this was on March 22nd when they had a four-way match for the TBS title, and Statlander had told Willow how she desperately wanted to regain the title. And she mentions how she Statlander came back from two torn ACLs when most of these bitches get a sinus infection and don't want to show up for work. And I'm talking about the men. Statlander said, "I finally did something for myself. I've only been here to clean up everyone else's mess, and I'm done being the protector. Now you're all going to need protection from me."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was our first look at Chris Statlander as a heel. I thought she sounded good, you know, almost good enough to the point where I wonder if she really needs Stokely Hathaway. But obviously it makes sense with the story, and certainly having Stokely Hathaway attached to Statlander can't hurt. Stokely sounded great too. Now he's like, you know, sounds like more of a meaner heel and not just somebody who's kind of there for comic relief. So it's a much needed refresher, I think, for both of their characters. And this feels like a more high profile heel turn than, like, you know, what people like Deonna Purrazzo and Taya have had, for instance.
There was a video package for MJF, the very elaborate package here on his whole AEW run, his return on Sunday, being the youngest AEW champion, making 10 title defenses, the longest match in AEW history when he beat Bryan Danielson, being inducted into the National Jewish Sports Hall of Fame, and ending on his tattoo and re-signing with AEW. And this was our, that was the presence of MJF, and he'll be on the show next Wednesday.
Yeah, maybe I mean, I wonder if they ever considered putting him on the show, but I also wonder if there's like an intentional sort of like putting him away so that the audience would get upset about it, so that they might want to demand to see him that much more for the week after. I don't know.
Well, there is like the natural question of, you know, trying to put all your top guys into the battle royal, and you would have pushed like to put MJF on this show. You really do need to almost come up with a reason for him not to be in this gauntlet at the end of the night as well.
Don't you need that excuse?
Well, I'm at this point now with AEW where, I mean, listen, I love this gauntlet match, but it is one where you're asking where all the major like top names are that, you know, with all due respect to like who they had in this, you know, AEW has all these top guys, and realistically, you had what, one very viable main event star, and he won the match. The Bucks come out, followed by Okada, followed by Jack Perry, and the crowd is booing them. And Okada, who this man is just, I mean,
promo of the year.
Oh, okay. He gets on the mic, "Shut up, bitches." And this place, this turned him babyface. The crowd cheered this so loudly. They thought this was awesome. And then Jack Perry takes over. "The Elite run this shit." And he mentions being lit on fire and that it was his first AEW match in 9 months. And he pinned Bryan Danielson. So then,
which seems to hint at a future match.
I think so. Two. Yes. Nick plugs the Reebok pumps, and then they show a video of a Lamborghini. And I thought Okada had his peak of the segment. Then we got his reaction to this Lamborghini. Oh, my God. Is this a dream? And he starts crying, thanking them, and then just stonewall as he pulls down the microphone. I thought it was, like, guaranteed this Lamborghini was getting destroyed on this show, but never happened. He got the Lamborghini and nothing happened to it.
Oh, they're probably saving up for that. You know, you don't have to destroy it.
I guess you want to wait on that one, but that Lamborghini, yeah, I think is going to be destroyed. And this man has just made this like his prized possession. You're right. They should wait to have this destroyed at a later date. But dude, Okada was amazing during this.
He was hilarious. This is a Lamborghini Huracan, and I'm very curious to know how much these go for. If they're going to destroy it, how much does Tony Khan actually want to spend? Let me just see here.
Probably cost a lot more than the $100,000 he donated today.
Canadian, $288,000.
Okay.
So does he want to spend that budget on a stunt? Maybe he could buy a used one. So he was great. Okada was amazing here. Who would have thought? Like, clearly, I think we could tell from, like, just even throughout his New Japan run, there was a certain sense of humor about him that wasn't necessarily coming out in the Rainmaker character. This is the type of role where that can fully come out.
Matt takes the blame for Adam Copeland's injury because Matt was in the gorilla position, and right before the match, he wished Adam good luck and told him to break a leg. And because he has broken his leg, they are stripping him of the TNT title. And the announcers are like, oh, can't he relinquish it? Like, okay, we can argue semantics, I guess. Yeah, they need a new champion, and then they announce, we are naming Jack Perry the new champion. When all of a sudden we hear Christopher Daniels' voice, and he comes out, and he has been given a new job from Tony Khan. He is now the interim EVP. And he announces
interim EVP.
An interim EVP.
I think so. A more appropriate title would have been assistant to the EVP. Assistant to the VP, I guess. Mm.
Well, they can work.
He should have been he should be the Dwight Schrute of Tony Khan.
Well, came up with a novel idea. AEW is going to hold a tournament over the next few weeks to determine the new TNT champion, and they're going to have qualifying matches where there will be no seconds, no managers, and no interference. We're going to do Continental Championship rules. So again, it begs the question why there are certain titles that are above interference, but yeah, others that by all means. So the winners of these matches will all go to Forbidden Door to wrestle in, does anyone have to guess, a ladder match to determine the new champion.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not a tournament, okay, which I think a lot of people were complaining that AEW would add another on the fly, even though the Owen was coming up. I mean, this is, I think, perfectly fine for, you know, the sort of unpredictability of this unfortunate injury. I also like the fact that a ladder match, well, first of all, it adds something to Forbidden Door. It allows, I'm assuming, members from any of these rosters that might be involved on the show to be a part of this match. And I think the ladder stipulation kind of pays tribute to Adam Copeland in a way, you know, just given his history with TLC and Money in the Bank. I think it's a great, you know, sort of substitute for a terrible injury.
You know, they could have had a lot of fun with the news over the last few days. Like, the Bucks could have really come out and said how we were really disappointed in this TNT championship being vacated. And then they could argue and say, well, we were not actually disappointed. That would have been a little too, I guess, too inside with the recent Puck report about the television negotiations with TNT.
Oh, yeah. I see. Now, these are the jokes you should say for Brandon.
I know.
Earlier in the afternoon.
This is where I'm just throwing them out there. So the first qualifying match will be on Friday on Rampage, and they go after Daniels, but he gets back up in the form of the Acclaimed and the big bully in the yard, Daddy Ass, that everyone stands
will
down
he
for.
Be in the tournament?
Well, he was rocking the shoulder tape here, but I thought he should have been in the gauntlet, to be honest. I mean, it's Billy Gunn.
I think he should have won the gauntlet. Yeah,
just the tease of Billy Gunn versus John Moxley.
New Japan,
Billy Gunn versus Swerve. It would have been. Yeah. Swerve and Nana do a promo in the back. Swerve had a good line here that he had to give Kill Switch a kill shot for the Lucha Underground fans out there, and he's curious who his next challenger is, and he looks off screen and says that in the match, there's some surprises, some former champions, some current champions. So he's probably just looking at the list of the names.
He's looking at the rundown. Yeah.
He could have just spoiled it. Just tell us who's going over. Yeah. I guess not.
You could see Well,
he's literally like looking off the screen. He's just got the list.
He's looking at the list of people, of participants, not necessarily the winner.
So then they announce next week, MJF, some very loud boos from the Kia Forum crowd. That takes us to a promo from Roosh, who congratulates MJF for coming back, but warns him, if you mess with me, if you mess with the bull, you get the horns. Yes. So MJF is coming back for a match with Roosh.
Yeah, which is terrible news for Roosh. Okay. Like, you're trying to build up a comeback, and your first match back is against another guy, a bigger, more popular guy, making another comeback. You're probably not going to win, and you're probably going to be forgotten about. So can they avoid that for Roosh? Let's find out.
Well, then he'll have some video packages after when he disappears after this loss to MJF, and then he's coming back.
A few months later, sure.
So we go. Worth noting, they had announced Saraya and Mariah May for tonight's show, and they never addressed it on the show, but then they plugged it that it'll be on next week's Dynamite.
Yeah, yeah. It makes me really wonder if the Monet match was always planned or if it was a last minute decision.
I mean, you would think that the Saraya May match was going to be in its place. Like, mm-hmm. you would think that if Monet was wrestling on this show, you would have wanted to get that out there.
So what was the thinking behind it? Was it the fact that they were in LA and they wanted a Monet match?
I mean, there could have been an issue with Saraya or Mariah May. Like, maybe one of them was just not ready this week.
Could have been like the Cure being available as well. Like, I mean, we're just speculating at this point, but
because they announced the match, I think they announced the match on Tuesday, and then they did a Control Center segment today, and they made no reference to it. So I'm imagining by earlier today, they knew the match wasn't happening tonight. But that takes us to the Forbidden Door Casino Gauntlet. And listen, I know some people are kind of tired of AEW's variations of the Battle Royal, but I thought
this is a winner, okay?
I thought this match was a ton of fun, and this was one of the most stacked matches of its type when it comes to just sheer talent that they had. This was insane what they had of these nine people that just came time after time with the mysteries. So its first pinfall or submission ends it. So we start off with Jay White and Pac. So in theory, one of these guys could win it before anyone else enters, which would have been... the best ending to this match. It ends
at
in
some
minutes.
Point. They're gonna have to book one of those finishes. Where,
oh,
like,
that would be so lame.
You're promising 21
way.
People, and then it ends like within the first. I don't think so. Well, it has to be the right context. Yes.
Was that
like,
the number they did? They give a number of how many? Yeah. They did 21. Say 21. Okay.
They said it last time too.
Okay, so there were 11 people that were just standing there in their gear.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Mystico is out third. He got a pretty good reaction here. This was a good place to bring him back. He had not been on AEW programming since March. And
LA gave him a great reaction.
Yeah. Jay tries to undo his mask, and then Pac launches Jay White so fast into the corner. Fourth is Will Ospreay, who gets the biggest reaction of the night. This place exploded for Will Ospreay, and he comes out, and you've got the history with Jay White, you've got the history with Pac, and then Mystico does La Mystica onto Ospreay. And the way these two are getting into it after the match too and exchanging words, I have a pretty good sense that they're going to do a match on television at some point in these coming weeks.
That would be amazing. Yeah, honestly, like last time it was Will Ospreay that I think was obviously like the big difference maker for that Casino Gauntlet. And I think the key to that one's success, because it became a match where it was suddenly Will Ospreay facing having these interactions with people you've never seen him have interactions with. Some of them you have, but like even those were kind of cool, like a Jay White. And this match was very much the same. This was a point where Will Ospreay was in the ring and you're realizing, oh yeah, Jay White is here. Oh, yeah, Will Ospreay and Pac can have an interaction. Then you remember Mystico is in the ring with Ospreay at the same time, and those two can have an interaction. Like, this is why I think this match has worked both times. It's because you're getting these dream pairings, you know, in very short succession.
Fifth was Shota Umino, who comes out, and he breaks up La Mystica and has this amazing sequence with Ospreay, another one who's had history with Ospreay, and hits this tornado DDT. Sixth is Claudio Castagnoli, who was another, like, this guy might have been the MVP of the match, because this dude is, like, this incredible base for all these Lucha guys. For Leo Rush would come out seventh as a big surprise, and just watching those two together was amazing.
First of all, like, I think just the fact that Leo Rush is back in AEW, even in a match like this, that's a headline grabbing, you know, news event, right? Like, that's real Forbidden Door stuff for me, you know, with the way he exited way back. Or like, who knows kind of what happened with the whole, like, Big Swole thing, but, like, he didn't have a long stay in AEW.
Are you saying that not only does Roosh have to face MJF, but he's now not even the number one Roosh in the company?
Perhaps. So, like, Leo Rush coming in, like, let's just remember, like, we're seeing Mystico in here. We're seeing Shota Umino here. Leo Rush is in this. Like, these are big surprises.
Of these nine, you can make any combination of these nine in matches, and they'd be terrific TV matches, if not higher.
We also have to mention the picture-in-picture spot with Claudio Castagnoli.
Yeah, I was going to get to this.
He did big swings on everybody. Jay White is in. He does 10 swings on him. Mystico is in. He does 10 swings on him. Osprey is in. He does 10 swings. And at this point, he's like huffing and puffing. He's tired. Then Shota Umino comes in. He does 10. Pac comes in, who he catches in midair. And Pac isn't just like, Pac is squirming in the middle of this big swing. So Claudio has to like basically like wrestle a
tornado. He's holding him up almost like it was like a like a Boston Crab setup, the way he was going around. Like Pac was like completely upside down taking this giant swing.
And he's moving around. So like Claudio still swings him 10 times. So we're talking 50 swings on 5 different people in the body of this picture-in-picture break. It was like one of the best. Oh, by the end of it, he teases doing it to Bryce, of course, because he's dizzy, which was
yeah. And if amazing. You were only watching the picture-in-picture, the audience was going to go nuts if he had done it to Bryce, to the point I thought he was just going to call an audible and do it, because the place would have exploded if he did it on Bryce. But that was it was a great sequence.
He had a great excuse because he was dizzy, and I don't think you could can you disqualify somebody for doing a big swing to him? Come on, it's not exactly that offensive of a maneuver. You're just kind of like
it's playoff
season,
playoff rules.
Yeah, it was like the best picture-in-picture spot ever.
So Leo Rush, as we mentioned, was 7th. He was awesome in this match. I would love to watch him and Claudio just so get like great. 7 minutes. Orange Cassidy comes out 8th, and he comes out to the Pixies as well. So he came out to both his themes on this show.
Oh, he was wearing the black shirt, if you notice.
So we now have the split personality of Orange Cassidy.
I guess this is his version of like the Great Muta. This is his demon. That's black shirt, yeah. Orange Cassidy.
Demon Orange Cassidy. Okay. Yeah, he's all bandaged up from the attack earlier. And Ospreay sizes him up for the hidden blade, stops, and then White intervenes with a sleeper suplex to Ospreay and a uranage onto Orange Cassidy. 9th is Hechicero, who has not been on AEW since February, and hits a springboard Rana, or is hit with a springboard Rana by Mystico, and this unbelievable tilt-a-whirl into a head scissors on Claudio, followed by a springboard Rana to the floor onto Claudio. Again, Claudio was probably the MVP of the match overall. Like, he worked with everyone, and you just wanted to watch like different matches of Claudio involved with all these guys of all different like sizes and shapes. Robinson, then Juice Robinson, knocks Pac off the turnbuckle, just like he did on Sunday, but now it's legal. White hits a sleeper suplex to Cassidy. Ospreay's in with the hidden blade. Stormbreaker gets countered into a Rana by Cassidy for a near fall, and then Ospreay connects with the Oscutter, pinning Orange Cassidy, and Will Ospreay wins the gauntlet and will challenge Swerve Strickland, who comes down for a stare down as they go off the air. Probably not the match you were expecting this early at Forbidden Door, but you have now made this gauntlet Will Ospreay's match, and this all of a sudden is a really big match for Forbidden Door.
Huge, yeah. I mean, so first of all, let's just talk about the gauntlet. I mean, I thought
this was awesome.
The first one was great. I heard a lot of criticisms about maybe the rule set being confusing. I think that's just to be expected whenever you're introducing something new. I'm sure the first Royal Rumble was very confusing to some people as well. But
the original Rumbles were like they bombed. Like when they tried them out on house shows, like Vince hated the idea of the Rumble. And it was only when they needed to come up with an idea for USA that they revisited it. And yeah, it did not get over at first and did not draw.
But clearly they were happy enough with the reception that they got for the first time to do it again, to put it in a pretty high profile spot, you know, in the lead up to Forbidden Door. And they did it even better this time around. Again, so much of the key is the surprises. And I think the level of talent, and AEW has no shortage of that. Like, this was a great glimpse into not just obviously the AEW roster, but the connections that this and the access this promotion has to people coming in from various promotions. Forbidden Door is like the perfect time to do something like this. And I hope this becomes an annual tradition to find your next challenger.
Wait, they did one in April. They might be a monthly tradition.
You're right at this point, yeah. But this was a lot of fun, you know, better than last time. And everybody felt like, you know, everybody was a major player in this one, you know. I hope to see a lot of them involved at the pay-per-view. And yeah, Ospreay versus Swerve is a match that I think we're all probably pretty surprised by. I mean, some people were expecting this to be a Wembley match. I mean, I expected Ospreay, given the fact that he has the international championship, to not be anywhere near the world title scene. But clearly they might have bigger plans for both of them, maybe in pay-per-views ahead. And this was a bit surprising. What do you think, John?
Well, first of all, just my thought on the gauntlet. Like, I love the match. As I mentioned before, like, there is the the fact that when AEW does these types of matches, you do focus on like where are all of your biggest stars. I do give some leeway on this one because when you think about it, like number one, you know, you
MJF could have been 21.
MJF to me was like a glaring one, like just from a storyline perspective, why he would not be in this match. Samoa Joe was another one. Like those are the big ones, but you have the guys that are selling the loss from Anarchy in the Arena. And that does give an out for like primarily a Danielson or a Darby. You can argue that John Moxley already has his scheduled title defenses coming up. He is going to be defending his title probably at Forbidden Door, but it is still a consistent thing that, you know, you have all these main event stars and, you know, you watch a match like this, you want to see all those big stars, but there's a ton of injuries in AEW too. I didn't think this one was as glaring as some of the other ones where they do these tournaments and all your big guys are on TV, but none of them are involved in the big tournament.
Maybe it's a random draw, you know, like they might pick names out of a hat and, you know, they fill up the 21 and not everybody gets called.
And they picked it. They're like, Roosh. They're like, read the other hat. Leo.
Exactly.
I was happy to see that, to see Leo Rush back here. But I thought the match was great. To be quite honest, I wish they dedicated more of the show to it. I think you could have gone a bit deeper into this because I really enjoyed this match a lot and they had to wrap things up. Rampage on Friday is going to be at.
First of all, we should talk about Swerve versus Ospreay. I mean, this point guarantees that Swerve will probably be in the main event at Forbidden Door. This is a headlining match if there ever is one for a pay per view like that. So I'm happy to see that for Swerve. This is a high profile match, and how do they book their way out of this? Do you think Ospreay wins or loses?
I think this makes for a super compelling main event because this, unlike the Christian Cage match that the only complaint people had was believability of a title switch, this, the opposite. I think people could totally see them doing a title. There's a complete viable option of Ospreay winning this belt or at the very least coming out of this match with a reason to do a rematch or something that this sets up Wembley for Ospreay, and maybe they take him in a different direction and keep it on Swerve. Like it's one of those things where, as we've talked about with this Swerve thing, like you don't want to necessarily be programming when this guy is dropping the title as soon as he wins it. Like he is just getting his like bearings as he's been champion for like 6 weeks. And yeah. I think like you haven't even scratched the surface yet with him.
Yeah, somebody in the chat room reminds us that the Owen Hart tournament winner gets that title shot at All In. So how does that kind of figure into the plans here? You know, does this rule out Ospreay versus Swerve for All In, which was perfectly fine? I think Ospreay can lose this one. You know, he's got the international championship, and it kind of, again, paved the way for Swerve to carve his own thing as the definitive top dog. Ospreay will be fine, like, you know, holding down that sort of, like, secondary tier on his way to building. He can enter a world title picture really any time, and that's not going to change in the next year. But doing the match now, I could see Ospreay losing it to build to a bigger rematch later on, whether or not it's at All In.
Well, you also have to look at the fact that like the Wembley ticket sales, like they're at about 40,000 right now. And what's going to move tickets for Wembley? And that's argument.
Ospreay
can
lose the match and then win the title shot back through the tournament if that's the end goal that they want.
And be in the Owen Hart tournament simultaneously? Because they would have to announce it, because I imagine
when does the tournament start?
It's got to start soon because it's got to go throughout June. The finals are July 10th. They're a week after, or 10 days after the pay-per-view.
Okay, so they have to start before Forbidden Door.
Yeah, which would be clumsy to have to be building up for a title match and being in a tournament for a title match.
Yeah, so I don't think Ospreay will be in the Owen then.
Yeah, it would suggest he would not be. So anyway, I think it's certainly they have a plan if they're going this direction, but I'm sure this was not the match you were expecting for Forbidden Door. But just going over the lineups that they announced for Rampage on Friday, this is at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. They're bounced again. Konosuke Takeshita against Penta, which is a qualifier for the TNT ladder match. Tony Storm against Viva Van. Kyle O'Reilly, the championship challenger incumbent, is in action. But the big one, Satnam Singh, is in action. If that doesn't force you to tune in at 6:30 p.m. on a Friday, I don't know what does.
Give me Satnam and Kyle O'Reilly. I want to see that match.
I know. Why are they in separate matches? I just want to see Sutnam wrestle every one of the Gauntlet members. Hetchicero versus Sutnam Singh.
Ooh, that'd be great. Yes.
Collision, which they are taping on Thursday night, will air Saturday with Will Ospreay against Kyle O'Reilly for the international title. And then next week, they announce Soraya, Mariah May, and MJF returning. So that is what's coming up, and that's the show. I thought tonight's show was... I really enjoyed that Gauntlet. I thought that was the high point of the show. But Swerve and Killshot was a very good TV match. John Moxley and Rocky Romero was a very good TV match. Monet and
Mercedes.
Scott. Yeah, like match. Yeah. All very good matches. And the Gauntlet to me was a step above. But yeah. It was, I would say that was the strength. But as well, like a lot of like talking segments on an AEW show that you don't always get between the Callis segment, between the Jericho segment, the championship celebration, but they did have a lot of angles to push on this show. And I would say you have two of the key matches at Forbidden Door between the Swerve Ospreay match and Mercedes and Stephanie Vaquer. Because Moxley, you won't be able to determine his match until at least after Dominion. So we're talking several weeks until they can, because that's June 9th.
Maybe it's a rematch.
Yes.
We're going to get evil. We're going to get evil in some form, I feel, at Forbidden Door. I was entertained by tonight's edition of Dynamite. You know, for a show that I don't know if I had that much interest necessarily going in.
This did not look like an inspiring lineup on paper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did a lot of great building for Forbidden Door. And I think like this show conveyed maybe the excitement around Forbidden Door season, I guess, as it's known now, with interactions from not just New Japan, but also CMLL as well, which makes things that much more unpredictable and dynamic and, again, interesting.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com. Okay, we'll go to the forum, and if you have any super chats, you are free to send them in now. Share your thoughts on whatever you would like to discuss.
Yeah, first of all, let's go to Jake from the Windy City, who has a super chat for being a member for 16 months. Thank you very much, Jake, for being a longtime member at our YouTube members section. Awesome main event. Surprise, they're going with Will and Swerve this soon. I'd argue neither needs to be losing yet at this point. It's very gutsy booking.
I like when you have matches like this where you make compelling arguments that either one should win. I think that's what you want out of a main event. It was the exact opposite of like the complaint that people had of Swerve and Christian Cage. You knew you were going to get a great match, but you understood what this was being built towards. Like I don't like your title match on pay-per-view being like, you know, it's just a layup type of match where it'll be a great wrestling match, but the outcome is of no dramatic outcome. So for this one, and quite honestly, like these guys are going to have a killer match. It's not going to harm the loser, but it is. It's coming soon, and it tells you that they have a larger idea for All In of some sort. And like Will winning, like maybe I don't know if it would be he's winning his championship. I don't know if I'm doing that in Long Island, New York.
I think for Swerve to have his first defending pay-per-view main event to lose the championship, I think would hurt Swerve. I actually think Swerve has more to lose. Well, Swerve obviously has more to lose than Will Ospreay. But I also think like Ospreay is still being perceived in my mind at a level above Swerve Strickland. I think a lot of people consider Ospreay almost like an uncrowned, you know, rightful champion in AEW right now. And so I think having Swerve beat Ospreay will give Swerve that much more credibility in everybody's eyes. And I don't think it hurts Ospreay at all. Ospreay at this point, I really do feel is kind of bulletproof. I mean, just because of the level of performer he is, because of the great promo that he's become. And you could delay that push for the championship by having him lose to the A guy in Swerve perfectly fine, in my opinion. So that's what
you've got MJF in the mix as well. Mm-hmm. Like you got to figure out, like he's going to have something major, you would think, in Long Island.
Oh, huge. Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's go to Jonathan Meyer. MJF versus Evil, clearly. That's for the IWGP Championship.
Yes.
That's going to be the match.
Okay. Yeah, okay. We can hold our breath.
All right. Jonathan Mayer sends $5 to say, good job rolling with the tech issues. Thank you very much. A bit trying. Sorry about that, everybody, earlier. Also, shout out to Drugs Delaney in the hospital.
Okay. Well, shout out to him. Hopefully, hopefully he is recovering.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Lastly, Robert Pearson sends $2 to say, beautiful hoodie, John.
Yes, it's wonderful. You can't beat it. All right, let's head on over to the forum, and we start with Javier from Texas. What a great presentation, referring to the Gauntlet match. Great presentation of immense array of talent AEW has at their disposal. Beyond excited to see Swerve and Ospreay. Shout out to Sean Ross Sapp for calling Christopher Daniels the rehired power.
The rehired power, and clearly he has powers where he can rename TV shows, because we're going to be getting Friday Night Dynamite this week.
Is that what he called it?
Yeah. He called it Friday Night.
Well, it's his first night in the
first day on the job. I know. Yeah.
They'd probably be better to just call that show Friday Night Dynamite.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Mark P says it was a pretty middling show, as most of AEW's post pay per view shows seem to be, aside from the Mercedes match. An American heel caught up until the main event, but holy shit, what a main event. It feels like they worked the kinks out of the stipulation and, combined with the hot crowd, delivered a home run of a match. Just 25 minutes of fast paced insanity. I loved it. Swerve versus Ospreay is a massive match, and I'm excited to see where it goes. Also, I feel like Chris Daniels is made for an authority figure role. I really like that.
We'll see. It's obviously a role that's going to be a permanent one for the time being. I don't know how crazy I am for it in an AEW setting, but it's...
You need a counter to the Bucks, though, and without having Tony Khan, like, be involved. And I think this is probably going to tell you that Tony isn't going to be involved for a while.
I think you purposely have a surrogate now in Christopher Daniels. Yeah. All right. Mr. Kane writes, what a main event. The caliber of talent collected in that gauntlet was incredible. Every promotion was wonderfully highlighted. The variation in wrestling styles married in beautiful violence. My God, so fun. Honestly, this was funner than the Royal Rumble. No contest. Well booked. I can't wait to see these guys again, hopefully in their respective matches on Forbidden Door.
Funner than the Royal Rumble. Well, it was like, what, a 20-minute thing? Compared to like the Rumble that usually goes an hour. Can this Casino Gauntlet go an hour?
It can go longer than it did tonight. You only got the 9 people in this one.
Someday we're going to get a 21-man Casino Gauntlet that's going to go an hour, and they're going to be 21 people in a match trying to score a pinfall, and it's going to be nuts.
This one went 22 minutes.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, Matthew England says, this was a fun main event that I feel made up for a subpar show. No MJF, no Willow, no Undisputed Kingdom, who are all involved in top angles at Double or Nothing. Were Undisputed Kingdom really involved in a top angle? I mean, Adam Cole got kicked in the balls. Like, they're just not a top act right now. I know they wanted something for next week, but a lot of the show felt like how back in the day when WWE would have a hot pay-per-view and followed up with a subpar Raw. The main event was great. I'm just curious if this becomes AEW's first DQ finish on pay-per-view. As we know, Tony doesn't like to have to beat anyone. Do we know that of Tony?
There's certainly protection of guys, but I would not expect that they're going to do some.
So they could do a double time limit draw, which would necessitate what, 60 minutes on pay-per-view, right, for a title match?
Yeah,
they're probably not doing that.
I mean, this company in this incarnation is more likely to do a time limit draw than they would be to do a DQ finish on a pay-per-view title match going on last. Yeah. Like, I just think that you're just designing that for backlash from your audience that would not react well to that.
Can you imagine a 4.5-hour pay-per-view with a 60-minute match in the main event?
Yes, I could.
Okay.
I mean, they did MJF and Danielson. That went like 65 on pay-per-view.
True.
So. Mm-hmm. We go next to Muggin. Inside Tony Khan's mind lurk two wolves. The patient wolf said to hold off on Will Ospreay's world title match until Wembley. The impulsive wolf said, do it now. The Casino Gauntlet match made him succumb to temptation. My little parable aside, the main event was a case study of the amount of talent AEW has under its roof, as well as guest stars on speed dial. Has AEW booked themselves into a corner by putting Will and Swerve together for Long Island? This feels like a no-win situation. The Learning Tree segment was a waste of time.
Man, I feel like we need a movie trailer voice for Muggin segments. You know, plug it into like AI.
The Tale of Two Wolves.
Yeah. Thank you, Muggin. Very well written. Jay from Colorado says, I thought it was a fun show and the ending's gauntlet match was intense. With the announcement that MJF will be returning to Dynamite next Wednesday in Loveland, Colorado, I'm tempted to go, especially since there are a ton of tickets still left. But it's almost a two-hour drive and it's definitely a hard sell. There's no venue small enough for AEW to run in the Denver metro area anymore since the First Bank Center is closed in Broomfield. So this is the closest they can get, but it's a drive for those of us south of Denver. Hopefully Tony finds something closer to the metro area soon because we do have the fan base. By the way, GCW is coming to Colorado for the first time on June 14th. That one I will make time for.
Okay. And the last word goes to Cody from Maine. By default, one would expect the winner of the gauntlet to be from an outside promotion, so I'm genuinely shocked by the outcome of that fantastic main event. Would the commonly fantasy booked stage of All In be more fitting for Swerve and Ospreay? Time will tell. For now, I'm absolutely up for the unpredictability of the match that this bold decision has set up for. Enjoyable show overall. Jericho continues to win me over, and using this gimmick change to surround Hook with experienced workers like Shibata and Joe is a promising direction. And I have to mention Hechicero being a highlight this week. I had never seen him prior to his AEW debut, but he's a captivating performer. Fingers crossed he gets a chance to shine at the pay-per-view. See, most especially enjoyed the gauntlet match, which would have been the high point of the show and did get the lion's share of the television time.
Yeah. And a match like Swerve versus Ospreay, I think, will belong on any show without anybody ever complaining, you know. And at this point, Ospreay still feels close, like he still feels kind of like a New Japan guy, that it does kind of feel Forbidden Door-esque. You're also very likely to get Jon Moxley defending the IWGP Championship. So even that is kind of like weird. You know, you have
85 title matches. I'm sure you can have some promotion versus promotion title matches on this show, and it will be just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there you have it, everyone. That was tonight's edition of Dynamite. So jump on to the Post Wrestling Cafe on Thursday for our latest installment of Talk, the in-person edition of Talk. Maybe it'll be some walk and talk. Who knows? But that's going to be coming out Thursday. Friday, we are back with Rewind to SmackDown and a free edition of MCU Later, as WH Park and Rich Fan are going to be reviewing the 2000 X-Men film. Plus, WH is back on Saturday welcoming Daniel Makabe to the long and winding Royal Road, and they're going to be watching Tsuyoshi Kikuchi and Kenta Kobashi against Doug Furness and Dan Crawford from May 1992. In Sendai. So that should be a lot of fun. And of course, we have the UFC 302 review, Collision Course, tons of shows. The whole schedule can be found at postwrestling.com. And one more time, the cash-in going down live Saturday, July the 6th at 2 p.m. Eastern time at Yuck Yucks in Toronto, 224 Richmond Street West. We will be doing a live Q&A with myself and Wei, Braden Harrington and Davey Portman of Poison Rana. They will be doing their own games at the show, and it'll be a great listener meetup for all to attend just 15 minutes away from the Scotiabank Arena, where Money in the Bank is going down that night. So tickets are $30. It's a 19-plus event. Tickets available postwrestling.com/live. So pick them up now, and we hope to see all of you on July the 6th.
Not all of you, but most of you.
98% of you were looking forward to seeing. But that's it for us. We'll talk with you on Thursday, literally.